This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Awesome! Yes, the man I believe is going to be the king of Team WWE.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Hold it, hold up. Wait a second. Miz, I got news for you. You're way, way, way too late. We realize how important this match is to WWE, and we couldn't rely on somebody who was going to make their decision the day of SummerSlam. So we all have gone out and found a seventh member of Team WWE.
Are you kidding me?
It's not you. As a matter of fact, it's somebody that hates the Nexus just as much as all of us. The seventh member of Team WWE is Daniel Bryan.
What? Daniel Bryan? You gotta be kidding me!
This is ridiculous! This is a huge mistake! Daniel Bryan was the Miz's rookie in NXT, and now he's part of Team WWE, and here we go!
Here we go, the American Dragon has arrived at SummerSlam!
Welcome back to another edition of the SummerSlam Rewind series here at placetobenation.com. I am going to be talking to you tonight along with two other gentlemen about SummerSlam 2010. This will be the last entry in our series, and it's kind of an interesting show to look back on. It's been 4 years now this year. It's kind of a show that feels nostalgic but still feels fresh. So let me first introduce the two men that are with me tonight. First, we have from the Goodwill Wrestling Podcast, the Wrestling with a Past podcast, and also the Place to Be Nation pay-per-view reaction podcast. Will, how are you doing tonight, Will?
Man, I'm doing great, man. I feel like I've done too many podcasts that like people are just going to tune out. Oh, Will, we're tired of hearing that guy, you know?
You're oversaturated.
I am, man. I don't feel fresh. Can a guy feel dirty? You know?
I don't know. I don't know. Let's ask our second guest that question from the Main Event podcast, Mr. Jordan Duncan. How's it going, Jordan?
I'm doing great. And personally speaking, I can't get enough podcasts with Will. So
you're so nice, Jordan. I want to give you a big hug, man.
Sounds great, man.
Hey, man, tell your bastard friend Scott he hasn't invited me on the Main Event since that first time I was on the show.
Jeez, I know. I'll tell you, it's all politics.
One and done. Oh, all right, man. Will, take us away with the great SummerSlam 2010.
Just as a backdrop, this was the summer of NXT. This was when NXT did that awesome angle at the end where they attacked CM Punk and John Cena. It made stars out of Wade Barrett. And they fired Daniel Bryan after choking. Who was the guy he choked? Justin Roberts. Yeah. And this sets that up nicely. And the first match that we watched was Dolph Ziggler versus Kofi Kingston. What's going on here, Chad?
So Dolph is your IC champion coming in, and he's with Vicky. This is his heel Ziggler Vicky run, which I actually was surprised that it had been 4 years since that happened. I mean, Dolph is a guy that I wouldn't say he feels fresh on the roster now, but maybe a year ago when he was kind of in the world title before the concussion things, he still felt relatively fresh and like a new guy, but he'd been around for a long time. So this is basically your two upper mid-carders in the WWE at this point having an IC title match to open the show.
And the year before, he had like a really nice series with Rey Mysterio and Kofi Kingston. Is this before his Randy Orton run or after?
This is after. Okay. So the Randy Orton thing was Survivor Series 2009.
Okay.
So he's already cooled off pretty good.
Whereas Ziggler is heating up, and he's got Vicky Guerrero, right, the greatest heat magnet the WWE's ever had. People fucking hated Vicky Guerrero, man. Like, I mean, I live in San Antonio. I mean, there's still a lot of Eddie nostalgia here. Man, once she would scream, excuse me, I've been in like several live events where people just hate her. They just want her to leave and get her ass beat. And it, you know, never happened. But I thought she was an awesome heel manager. So,
well, I don't know if it was on this show or if it was on a SmackDown lead up or something, but she gives a promo and literally the only words she says are excuse me over and over. She doesn't even say anything but that, and the crowd's just eating it up. It's awesome.
Yeah.
On this show, she grabs the mic quickly, says excuse me about four times before Kofi's music fires up. And yeah, she had some great heat. I thought this crowd was fairly tepid for most of the night, kind of to show my cards as far as the crowd's concerned for the whole show. But she was definitely seemed like one of the most hated heels on the entire show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what did you think about this match there, Chad?
There wasn't a lot going on. They wrestle for about 7 minutes, and then Nexus comes out and attacks kind of both guys, mainly Kofi, but Dolph gets worked for a little bit too. I did think Dolph was very good in the amount of time we saw here. Kofi completely wiped out on a tope early on. Spilled right to the floor. His neck bounced right off the mat. It was great. It was glorious. And Dolph really worked over that neck. And Kofi's the type of guy that I struggle with if he has limb work against him, because he usually shrugs it off and blows it off very quickly. So I thought it was pretty smart that they focused on the neck in this match, because, I mean, Kofi can still do his Thunder in Paradise and his boom boom drop and everything else with a hurt neck, because he's not using his leg or something else that had been worked over throughout the match. And Dolph was very good in varying his offense. He did a neck breaker. He did a chin lock that he stayed really active with. He draped Kofi's neck over the bottom rope. He did the Mr. Perfect snapmare. So I thought that Dolph got pretty high marks for me in this match and really did look like a real good up-and-comer on the rise and would be a main eventer pretty soon. Kofi's comeback, when he does make his comeback before the Nexus run-in, I thought was pretty dreadful, actually. He had some couple of bad punches. A sloppy drop kick thrown in.
Hold on. Saying Kofi had bad punches was like saying Kofi woke up this morning. Yeah. Guy is not a good puncher.
Yeah, these may have been bad by Kofi standard punches. So, and then he did a sloppy drop kick. So Kofi, to me, like we just said, I mean, Survivor Series 2009, I still remember that MSG Raw, where, you know, it was kind of like, holy crap, this guy may actually become something. And then it quickly fizzled. And I would say certainly by this point, you knew what you had with Kofi.
What about you, Jordan? What'd you think?
You know, one of the first things that I thought watching the show again was, oh, my gosh, Matt Stryker's on commentary for this show. And I forgot about it. Like 2 minutes in, I'm like, I need to watch this on mute. One of the first things he does, it just shows his total lack of like any knowledge of what he should be doing. He starts hyping up Vicky Guerrero as hot and beautiful, and it's like her character is supposed to be even the heels hater, you know? And I think he said she's beautiful. She looks like Joan Jett got stung by a bunch of wasps. I'm like,
that's awesome.
It's one of the weirdest lines I've ever heard. But so when I heard Matt Stryker, I'm like, we're going to get a lot of nicknames tonight, a lot of them. And he did not fail to impress me there. But the match itself was fine. I think Chad kind of hit on everything I would have said. Dolph wasn't frantic, which is kind of my problem with him now, is he just seems like he's on speed of 25 from start to finish, and he slowed it down a little bit. And it wasn't great. If anything, looking at that in 2010 to looking now, gosh, I said this, I think the last time I was on the main event, we were talking about Money in the Bank coming up. It was the preview show. And I was saying how everyone complains about John Cena. You know, he's stale. He's not fresh. He needs to do this, do something new. Kofi Kingston, how does he escape those criticisms? Because I just watched a Kofi Kingston 2010 match today, and I could have watched the exact same match on Monday night. He has not changed anything in 4 or 5 years.
He's about to. He's about to go.
That's true.
So.
And he's no longer from Ghana. He's from Kingston, Jamaica now, I believe. So that's about it. But yeah, he that dive that Chad was talking about was really crazy to me because it was like 30 seconds into the match, and he just misses a suicide dive and just bonks his face right off the guardrail. That's a spot that you probably would end a big match now, and 20 seconds into the first match of the show, we get the craziest bump of the night probably. Yeah. But, I mean, it was all right, I guess, but by the end of the show, I'd forgotten about it completely.
Of course.
So,
all right. So. Yeah. To me, this was just a match. You know, I mean, I think we've seen so many great matches from this company in the last 4 years that I had forgotten this match even took place. So, you know, I do remember Vicky and Dolph being like a really great heel tandem, but I don't think that this is anything to like go out of your way to see. You know, maybe you can go on YouTube if you have to, and download, you know, like the clip of Kofi crashing or something. Right? I mean, really, that's really what this amounts to. So.
Right.
And so that moves us to our next match. I'm guessing this might be Cameron's favorite match of all time. The best match in WWE history. Melina versus Alicia Fox for the WWE Divas Championship, right? This is the one she's talking about, right? That 5 minute and 20 second epic.
This is, it's a match that's kind of became famous just because of the...
Because of the what?
Hilarity of that statement. So Melina...
You're fading out there.
I think just the hilarity of that statement. I mean, to be uttered with maybe Flair Steamboat, kind of to utter Fox versus Melina is pretty hilarious.
She stuck to her guns, man. She didn't back down from Stone Cold either, did she? She had it ready to go, man. Christ. Anyway. Okay, so, I mean, do we have any thoughts on this? I mean...
Melina's outfit was insane. She looked like Tatanka took a trip down to Mexico.
I thought she stole Rey Mysterio's entrance gear from WrestleMania 22, I think.
It's crazy headdress and everything. I mean, this match is absolutely awful. The crowd is dead. Completely dead. It, really odd placement, I would say, that this is second from the top and a show this early. I mean, 15 minutes into the show, they throw these girls out here. Melina feigns that her left knee was re-injured, and Alicia Fox decides not to work on that at all, which makes no sense. So, I mean, she has an injured leg, and Alicia starts working over the arm. Melina gets her comeback with a scream and wins the title. I could not believe, actually, the thing I was most shocked about this match, even more than Cameron saying this is the best match of all time, was that Alicia Fox was the champion going in. I had no recollection of that whatsoever.
Either. Yeah, neither did I.
And then Lake Cool kind of comes out, and they attack Alicia Fox and beat up Melina. So this is essentially a segment to get over Lake Cool. So very odd and pretty...
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was a bad match, I think.
5 minutes, 20 seconds, and it felt like it was about 5 minutes, 10 seconds too long. So
I feel like we've talked more about this match than the actual time the match took place.
Probably.
I'm just saying. You know, I don't know.
Well, you know, Chad, you said that Melina injures her leg, and then Alicia Fox doesn't work on it, but Melina just starts kicking her anyways. Like, she injures her leg and then hits a super kick, you know? Yeah. So.
I thought for a second she was like doing the heel move where he acts like he's hurt, but you know, he's faking being injured. But yeah, I think it was just they had no idea how to construct a match.
You know, we were talking about Melina's outfit, and I'd forgotten about this outfit before I rewatched this. this was the skin outfit. This was
the flesh tone.
Flesh, yeah. This was the one that kind of made me like feel like a dirty old man, you know, like I hope my wife doesn't walk in, you know, during this match kind of vibe, you know, because Melina always makes me feel a little tingly inside. So that's all I got to say about that one. Is she Mexican?
It's gonna be a 30-minute podcast.
She's like a Mexican woman, right? Melina, is she Mexican?
I have no idea.
I like some Mexican women.
I don't want to be. Yeah, I was gonna say I don't want to be racist here, but
you know, just because you don't know what ethnicity she is doesn't make you a racist, Chad. All right.
Yeah, I'm just saying, Melina Perez. I can give my.
I mean, she might be like
give my estimations of her background.
Might be from Colombia or something. I don't know.
That's true.
I'm just saying, man. Like, all right, you know, my favorite women in all of wrestling are those. Like when you watch CMLL wrestling and the women that escort the wrestlers down and they're like bikinis, those are my favorite women in all of wrestling. That's what I want my women in wrestling to do, escort wrestlers down in skin-tight bikinis. Excellent. All right. Sorry.
By the way, Melina's Wikipedia page doesn't even say her ethnicity. It just says Latina.
All right.
That's it.
We'll call her a Mexican-American for now. Just so I can rule over her. All right.
Good.
Cool.
She's a Mexico.
Hey. All right. Anyway, let's go to a match I do have a lot to say about because it really pisses me off that it even took place and the way it went down. Big Show versus the Straight Edge Society. Not just one member of the Straight Edge Society.
All
three of them. CM Punk, Joey Mercury, and Luke Gallows with Serena on the outside. And this is like the death of the Straight Edge Society. What do you think, Chad?
Punk's wearing his I Broke Big Show's Hand t-shirt as an homage to Wahoo, which I thought was pretty cool. And the kind of the angle going into this is they've been banging up Big Show's hand. He does the choke slam and the knockout punch with. So he comes out with the hand all bandaged and taped up, and then he takes the tape off to show that his wrist is okay. Mercury and Gallows are pretty much kind of like your pinballs, henchmen heels throughout most of this match, where they kind of just are used by Show for his power spots. They get ran into each other probably about three or four times throughout the match. And this was kind of a weird match. To me, this felt like a SmackDown match instead of kind of four from the top on a SummerSlam, where we did get, this was my first match, Striker Note, where he drops a Sky Lolo reference during this match, which I thought was ridiculous. But I guess the finish here was basically Punk takes a walk on his partners. Big Show makes his comeback quickly, and he sends Mercury and Gallows into each other, gives them both a double shoulder block. He tries to give Punk the choke slam. Punk gets a high kick and some knees in the corner, and then Show dumps him to the outside. He bails with Serena. And then Mercury gets choke slammed on top of Gallows.
Yeah, what a travesty here. Just an embarrassment. Jordan?
Well, what's really crazy about this match is I'm looking at it right now. They got a minute and 20 seconds more than Melina and Alicia Fox did. It went 6 minutes, 45 seconds. That's insane. You know, one thing that I have in my notes that was ridiculous is in the pre-match video package, they showed Big Show when they were really beating his hand on SmackDown, and he's making these faces that almost looks like Curly from the Three Stooges has diarrhea or something. I don't know what he's doing. It's like, if that's what pain looks like, it was just ridiculous. But this killed Luke Gallows dead. This killed Joey Mercury dead. It's a shame, too. I mean, Punk's big enough to walk away from that and still be something. But these guys were dead in the water here. And that's a shame because I really liked Straight Edge Society. I thought they had some cool stuff. And I kind of feel like Big Show is a killer there, but, you know.
The original idea behind the Straight Edge Society was it was going to be CM Punk's version of the Fabulous Freebirds. Mm. With, you know, him as the mouthpiece, Gallows as the enforcer.
The big Terry Gordy cut.
You know. And then Mercury coming in as like your Buddy Roberts little guy, you know, guy who can take falls. Okay. And they were one of the most over acts in that early part of 2010. I mean, with the head, the head shaving, the, I mean, I always call this a punk straight edge Jesus moment, mm-hmm. you know, where old ladies were yelling at him, "You're not Jesus." You know, there's a YouTube clip of like, of fans, when the Straight Edge Society would come in, there's another YouTube clip of them in San Francisco, somewhere in the Bay Area, where the fans are throwing garbage at them. Punk's getting people thrown out of the arena. It was real heat. He was like the most hated person in the company at the time. And it's just a shame because whenever I look at CM Punk's career, it's always woulda, coulda, shoulda. He's always had like great ideas, great plans to draw money as a character because he believed in himself, and they always screwed it up. And you could argue, okay, well, Serena screwed the Straight Edge Society up. No, not really, because if you would have kept pushing Punk at the top of the card, if he was the one fighting for the world title at the time, you know, then he would have kept it together. And the idea behind the Fabulous Freebirds was those guys could lose every week, right? But they're at the top of the card. They're in the main event. They could lose every week. Michael Hayes cuts a promo the next week, forgets the last week ever happened, and they're still over. And they ran that for years, you know. And WWE didn't see it, man. And it's a shame because it's another wasted opportunity. Because, I mean, isn't that what we think? Like, man, there aren't any heels that are really over. There's not any real hated heels. You don't have that visceral emotion from the crowd anymore. And Punk got it. Punk was able to channel it, piss a lot of people off, and they choked on it, man.
Which is saying something too, because he's a guy that they want to like. You know, he's one of those internet darlings that they're like, oh, CM Punk, you know. And even those guys, he's still got. Was it the Rumble that year where he had that run where he cleared the ring and just cut a few promos? Was that the 2010 Rumble?
I don't.
Or was that 2011?
It might have been 11. I don't remember, man. I mean, it all blurs.
Yeah, same here.
You know, I just remember this moment because this was one of those things that I was really excited about, you know, Straight Edge Society.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, and it's a shame the way it ended up, you know. I mean, the fact that this match even happened to me is an embarrassment, you know. It was a squash of three guys.
Well, it's like Chad said, this is just felt like a SmackDown match more than anything, too, you know, which really hurt it. I mean, this is the second biggest show of the year.
Yeah.
And you basically just do a SmackDown storyline for it. And
if they would have done Big Show versus CM Punk straight up in like a 10-minute match, I have my feelings that Punk could have gotten a really good match out of Big Show. He knows how to work around big men. He knows how to work underneath. He knows how to play chicken shit heel. He could have done it. You know, it's just a wasted opportunity. And it really upsets me, man, because each time Punk kind of resets the ball in motion, you get behind him and you wish the company would see where he's going, and they never do, man. You know, just a shame. Shame he's out of wrestling. You just said the other day, are you ever going to go back to wrestling? Never, ever, ever, ever was it.
Yep.
Never, ever, ever, ever. So, you know, I think he's done, man. I think he's out for good. What do you think, Chad? You think?
Well, I mean, just in that interview, he looked really refreshed, but
yeah, he did.
Kind of going back to this, I mean, we're recording this kind of in the aftermath of the Battleground 2014 pay-per-view, and I do think this pay-per-view in some ways mirrors that some of the booking decisions that were made in Battleground, where you have young breakout guys that seem poised for something. And Punk, by this point in time, he'd main evented the previous SummerSlam with Jeff Hardy. Yep. And he was ready to be that guy, you know, maybe not a John Cena, but your John Cena alternate or the main foil to John Cena. And this match really seemed like we're not quite there yet to go behind CM Punk. It did feel like a squash of both the faction and him as an individual. And I mean, this show's only six matches strong. So yeah, this is four from the top, but in the match right after this, you have Sheamus and Randy Orton in a WWE championship match that feels really tired. You have Kane as the fucking world heavyweight champion. I mean, there's just a lot going on right now in 2010 WWE that feels broken. And I think this kind of feels like a lost year for him in a lot of ways, from this point up to when he takes over Nexus next year, really to the pipe bomb. He feels pretty directionless, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I'm going to add this too, that if you look at like John Cena's, his, what do you call it? You know, like your Flair Steamboat, your Misawa Kawada, like your classic opponent, the WWE always tried to paint it as Randy Orton. But the reality is that his best opponent, the opponent that's always kind of gotten the most out of John Cena, the one that is really the opposite of what Cena is, has always been Punk. Right. And I always thought that they've missed the perfect opportunity there to kind of build your classic Flair Steamboat, Misawa Kawada type rivalry between the two. You know, I mean, there were traces of it. You know, there's the Money in the Bank stuff, but they never went full bore, you know. And this is right after Miz had main evented Mania, or is that the next year?
That's the next year. Yeah.
Miz has the briefcase here still.
Okay.
Right.
Because I know, like, he was really bitter about that because he had already set up the thing where he knocked John Cena with the chair while he was an announcer. Do you remember that? And you know, he was primed for it, man. The crowd was ready for a Cena Punk feud at Mania. And they made it the Miz. And he was really bitter about that for a long time. So just wasted opportunity. Yeah. And so now we can talk about two guys who really feel like they're in the exact same place they were 4 years ago, except with less heat, right? And flip the roles. And that's
a lot less.
Yeah. Randy Orton versus Sheamus for the WWE Championship. What do you got here, Chad?
All right, so Miz comes out before the Sheamus-Randy Orton match, and basically the big question is, will he or won't he be on Team WWE? And he really plays that up. This show's only six matches long, but it lasts a very long time. It's 2 hours and 56 minutes on the WWE Network, so they were right up against that three-hour window. And segments like this were the reason, because this interview segment was longer than any of the first three matches so far. Miz calls John Morrison the Marty Jannetty of their tag team. And then basically at the end, he decides he will join Team WWE. And this was when Michael Cole was just starting to ramp up his Miz love. So of course, Cole goes absolutely nuts over Miz joining Team WWE and basically rides his jock over that decision.
Speaking of the decision, this was the summer of the decision.
And then Miz actually brought that up, too, to kind of get a dig at the NBA, the Lakers. This was right after their 2010 championship, and Miz predicts they won't win another championship. So Miz is looking good 4 years out, as the Lakers may be one of the worst teams in the league current days.
Some would say he's quite the prognosticator.
Yes, some would say that.
Anyway, man, how the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? Four years later, LeBron's back in Cleveland, you know. The Lakers, they're only a good draft pick or two from being right back up there. Right back up.
Yeah.
I hope not. I hate the Lakers. But anyway. So what about this match, Chad?
4 years later, Sheamus and Randy Orton would probably have a match that not too many people would care about. Oh, and that's kind of what we got here. So the WWE Championship match does start this pay-per-view about an hour in, almost exactly. And they really tried to build up this match as an epic match. They were trying to put over Sheamus as the heel champion. He'd just beaten John Cena in a cage at Money in the Bank. He'd looked pretty strong throughout his title reign up to this point. A little, you know, as a heel character, about as strong as a WWE heel, I'd say, is going to be. Orton, they were trying to portray as the number two babyface behind John Cena. And this match starts off with, I'd say, a lot of clobbering. Sheamus kind of powers Orton into the corner. Orton gives him some clotheslines, send him to the outside. Randy pounds on Sheamus on the outside. Orton gives him the Garvin stomp there, which I like. And then the tide of the match kind of turns when Sheamus sends Orton into the steps, because up to that point, Sheamus was getting beat up pretty bad. And as soon as – this was one of the bright spots of the commentary on the whole night, because as soon as Sheamus sent Orton into the steps, they brought up Orton's history of shoulder problems. And I thought Sheamus looked pretty good at the onset going after the shoulder, but then he goes back with stomps and chin locks. So he's not very focused on the shoulder or any part of the body with Orton. And as a result, using our friend Charles's favorite word, this control segment was not very focused at all.
Yeah.
And Orton goes for the assisted DDT on the corner, but Sheamus throws him to the outside. And again, kind of Sheamus falls up with some strikes and submissions. And eventually, Orton kind of makes his big comeback. He goes for the RKO, but there was even confusion on whether he hit it or Sheamus reversed it. It looked really bad. That was a really bad-looking spot. And then Sheamus is able to hit the bro kick for one of the good near falls of the match, and he pitches a fit afterwards and looks like a 12-year-old. And then he essentially just grabs a chair and throws the ref out of the ring for one of the cheapest finishes I can think of for a WWE title match. I mean, this is the second biggest show of the year. Or if you want to give the Rumble number two, this is number three. And for your WWE title match to end in this cheap fashion with this really cheap DQ finish, I thought this was a very frustrating finish. And I don't really understand if they were wanting to strap, you know, the rocket to Sheamus, why they didn't just let him beat Randy here. Orton comes back, he hits Sheamus right in the nuts, and then he hits an RKO in the announce table to kind of end the segment. And they give Sheamus a rub because he refuses medical help while they again talk about how great this match is. I didn't think this match was very good. I thought the announcers overselled it a lot. I thought Sheamus was a little bit exposed here. Really young, but asking him to kind of control a match. This match was 18 minutes long, and asking him to kind of take the meat of it and work over Orton in interesting fashion didn't work. And Orton's not exactly the best face in peril either. So this match really didn't hit the mark for me that much.
What about you, Jordan?
You know, I think they even had a worse match. If you remember, I think it might have been the Rumble of that year, 2010. They went out and had a worse match than that. This one was about 18, 19 minutes, felt like 45, which is never a good thing. The only thing I disagree with Chad on is I do think that Randy Orton was pretty over with the crowd. They seemed to be really digging him when he was getting to his big spots and stuff. Question for you guys, because you'd probably know this better than me. Orton did that bottom rope, what's the move, like the catapult. Didn't his dad used to do that move?
Yeah, he did do kind of an homage where he essentially catapults the guy on the bottom rope.
Yeah.
That was a pretty neat spot, and that is something that Cowboy Bob.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't.
No, that's a great spot, period. Especially if you're working the neck area or something. No, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. What's really crazy to me is, again, like we've already said once, second biggest show of the year, and they do a SmackDown finish or a Raw finish. And what's really crazy is I just looked it up. The next show, the September pay-per-view, they didn't even have a singles match with each other. So you'd think if they're going to do that finish, it's to set up maybe a rematch. And at the next show, it was a six-pack challenge. So I don't even know why they did that. I don't know. At least, I don't know, do a double DQ or something. Have them both go nuts. I don't know. It was just
Let me tell you, man, the hardest thing about watching these matches 4 years later or whatever, especially like with WWE pay-per-views, is I'm so done with Randy Orton.
Yeah.
I am. He's never left long enough for me to miss him, ever. And Sheamus is a guy that I actually like a lot as a wrestler, but I kind of want him to reinvent himself. And so when I'm trying to watch this match, it's like, I know I have the podcast to do with you guys, but I'm just not emotionally invested in it. I've seen this stuff over and over again for 4 years. You know, I'm so tired of these guys. And this wasn't a great match. It's not like I can go back. Like, I can go back and watch, like, Mark Henry versus Big Show from Vengeance of 2011. Or, you know, CM Punk versus Cena. Or something, you know, Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero or something. You know, I can go back and watch those matches because I'm excited about them and I enjoy those. And, you know, I can kind of relive those moments with these two guys who I'm not emotionally invested in and who will never leave my freaking TV screen long enough for me to miss them. Just, it bothers me that I had to watch this 20-minute thing only to end in a DQ. So pathetic.
Right. Right.
You know? Just bothersome. And speaking of guys that I wish would get off my TV screen, but we're going to wait till after the break to talk about that guy. Anyway, let's take a break here, fellas. And when we come back, we'll talk about the last two matches and we'll go in depth to see what all the members of the Nexus are doing.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show. Each and every week, we'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick. With over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place Simulation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Okay, welcome back to the Place to Be Nation. This is Will from the Goodwill Wrestling Podcast and Wrestling with the Past. And I'm here with my buddy Chad from Where the Big Boys Play and from the Main Event, Jordan. And we are watching SummerSlam 2010. And guys, we're about to get into a match between two wrestlers that I have diametrically opposite feelings for. Okay, we're talking Kane and Rey Mysterio. Kane versus Rey Mysterio for the World Heavyweight Championship, the big gold belt that was recently just given away to Ric Flair for whatever reason. But I hate Kane. I've never thought he was a good wrestler. I wish he'd get off my TV screen. I think Rey Mysterio's a living legend. This is an embarrassment for me when Kane defeats Rey Mysterio here at SummerSlam. Why don't you take us through the match, Chad?
It's not a great finish, but I will say this about this match. I think anybody that wants to claim Rey as a great worker, I would offer up this match as a good kind of bullet point for that resume, because I mean, Kane is someone that I would say the really good matches I've seen him in, I think it's fair to say I could probably put him on two hands in the 14-year career. He has about one very good match a year, if that.
And most of them had Daniel Bryan in them, by the way.
Or a gimmick, yeah.
Yeah. He definitely not going to be winning any awards for most outstanding wrestler. Anyway, I mean, this match is all about Rey kind of using his speed to his advantage. I mean, this is 2010 Rey Mysterio, so we're getting the little pudgier version of him, but he's obviously still faster than Kane. He has to stick and move, and it's all about that. He misses a 619 immediately, gets rolled out to the floor, but he rolls through, and then in a really cool spot, he kind of baits Kane to the floor and baseball slides him and does a running dive. Kane regains the advantage and throws Rey into the post back first, which looked pretty nasty. And then I'll give Kane some credit. We've had a couple of instances tonight where a body part has seemed to have an opening to be utilized and be worked over, and they've forgotten about it. We saw it with Sheamus, and then who can forget the Alicia Fox debacle earlier?
I already forgot about that debacle.
Lucky you. Lucky you, man.
but Kane actually does work the back decently. He locks on a bear hug and other stuff. And I'll say Ray here is absolutely selling his ass off. Ray gets a flurry, kind of goes for a 619, but again is clotheslined. And then I thought in a really cool callback spot, Ray gets thrown to the outside. And in the beginning of the match, he kind of was able to roll through, like I mentioned a minute ago. This time he falls like face first right onto the floor. And kind of splats the floor and looks pretty nasty. And Kane actually does a little bit of a King of the Mountain spot, which I thought was very interesting and different in WWE. But he abandons that, unfortunately. Ray ends up making his comeback. He gives a 619, which gets called again. Ray gets put in the casket. Ray fights out of the casket. The storyline of this match is pretty stupid, too, where Kane wheels down this red casket that Ray is apparently scared of. I mean, I guess Mexicans do not like caskets or something. I don't know.
We can ask Melina, I'm sure.
Yeah, we can ask Melina.
You fucking racists.
Ray was terrified of this casket. But Ray fights out of that. He finally hits the 619. He tries to go for his big dive, but Kane gets the big boot up and then hits the choke slam for the win. And I mean, at least with the choke slam, it's a hold that really is emphasizing a lot of damage on the back that's been worked on. So again, I thought this was a very good match. To me, it's in contention actually for match of the night with the main event. That's probably an unpopular opinion, I would suppose. If I was given star ratings, I'd probably go around 3.5. But I think for a Kane singles match, that's a pretty good job. It goes 11 minutes.
It's way generous.
Yeah. But yeah, I enjoyed this, actually.
Yeah. You know, you say it's in contention for match of the night, but I mean, what else is there? You know, there's only six matches.
Well,
so
this was the show that had the greatest match of all time.
That's true. So
keep that in mind.
I mean, I don't think it was outright terrible. I think it's a testament to Mysterio. You know, with him, it's kind of a you don't know what you got till it's gone for a lot of people. And the fact that he's not around to make guys like Kane look like passable wrestlers, that's where he's missed the most. Because I don't think this was outright terrible. Which I was expecting. And I got to say this, I was not a big SmackDown watcher at the time, so this storyline I didn't really remember. And watching this promo video for it, it sounds like maybe one of the stupidest storylines I've ever heard. Essentially, someone puts The Undertaker in a vegetative state, and we're led to believe that it was Rey Mysterio of all people. Which... I mean, of course it was, and then he says it's Kane and all that, you know, the Undertaker's magic and all that stuff happens. But no, the match itself wasn't too bad. I mean, it was it felt quick, at least, which usually is the opposite for a Kane match. And that's all on Ray. One of the funniest things, though, that Ray said was in the promo leading up to it, because he's afraid of caskets, is that caskets are for the dead. Which is quite the quote.
No shit.
Yeah. Right. Some of the quotes Ray had in this package were, I mean, one step away from Triple H saying, Kane, you are a murderer. I mean, it was really bad.
Hey, hold on. Rey Mysterio has never been known as a great promo guy except for his awesome dramatic work with Dominik and Eddie Guerrero in 2005. Okay.
I think Rey's most famous line of any sort is on like the DVDs, you know, the don't try this at home. I've had surgery 11 times on my left knee or something. That's something like the most famous thing he's ever said, you know. But, you know, the match itself, it wasn't terrible, you know, and I guess that's the best thing I can say. I'm with you, Will. I hate Kane. He's probably my least favorite guy on the roster now. Probably was in 2010, probably was in 2008, in 2006. I think the last time I remember enjoying him was, 2001, that Rumble run, he did good. And was it 2002 when they split? Yeah, it was 2002 when Brock went to SmackDown, and he was kind of that first babyface victim to Triple H. He was a pretty hot act then.
You mean the Katie Vick storyline? Yeah, that was.
Yeah, well, yeah, but before that, you know, they ruined him there. But that's really the last time he was at least on fire. I mean, I don't think he was ever really a really good worker. I couldn't think of a very good singles match. It didn't, like we said, didn't involve Daniel Bryan or a cage or a ladder or something. So just to have a Kane match that isn't terrible is a victory for me. So
I'm with you, man. I mean, this match was okay, man, but it just reminded me that I miss Ray and I wish Kane would leave. You know, yeah. This show is really messing with my head here. You know, it really is, man. The what ifs with CM Punk, the way they just destroyed him on the show, the Sheamus Orton match was depressing to watch again. This was depressing. The stupid Undertaker stuff after the match made no sense to me.
Right.
Like, okay, you're going to kill Rey Mysterio. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. I'm going to kill Kane. Wait. Well,
Kane kills me.
Yeah, it's just so stupid. Anyway, yeah. Guys, we're nearing the end of the line in this epic six match show. The last match, the main event. Team WWE has to fight for its life. They dust the mothballs off of Bret Hart. They get him in here against the young, the exciting Team Nexus. So let's run down the teams here. On Team WWE, we have John Cena, Daniel Bryan, Edge, Chris Jericho, Bret Hart, R-Truth, and John Morrison. And they're against the Nexus, Wade Barrett, Justin Gabriel, Heath Slater, David Otunga, Skip Sheffield, Michael Tarver, and Darren Young. And so before we actually talk about the match proper, I kind of want to run down each team and kind of give an update on where these guys are at. So John Cena, he's John Cena. We know where he's at. Daniel Bryan, I'm scared. The guy might never wrestle again. You know, we don't know, right? He's kind of in limbo right now. He's injured, but it's possible that he may have seen his last wrestling match.
And even if he does come back, he may never be, you know, the same.
Well, I think he's smart enough that if he adapts his style, he'll be fine.
But, yeah, he could.
You know, but I don't think that the things like the diving headbutt and those crazy dives outside are what make Daniel Bryan special anyway.
Right.
I think it's the fact
that they could go away and he could still be the same guy.
Yeah, for sure. Edge left due to injury. He was out the next year. Chris Jericho is a guy that probably should never come back. Probably should just be put in the Hall of Fame and make him an ambassador or something, you know, get him out. Bret Hart. I can't believe they put Bret this match. Because, right, the idea was, well, either he's going to win the match. Because you're not going to give him a bump. And if he doesn't bump, there's no way you can pin him. So you know that something screwy was going to go on with Bret Hart. R-Truth, who had like a short main event run, then turned into a jobber. And John Morrison, who's been fired. So that's your Team WWE. And so 4 years later, the only two permanent roster guys right now are John Cena and R-Truth. Yeah. And then we got Nexus, the future of WWE here.
Yeah.
Wade Barrett, well, he's injured right now, but, you know, his Bad News Barrett stuff was hot.
Yep.
Justin Gabriel is just treading water down there in Orlando at the NXT camp. Still
flirting with JoJo.
I'm thinking they must have lost his phone number after the recent round of cuts, and he survived it somehow. They just don't have him in their contact list or something.
He's a good wrestler. They should have him.
Yeah, he's good, but I'm surprised that he's still there.
Yeah.
Heath Slater, the only surviving member of 3MB, he's still there. David Otunga is on their website, but I guess he's just hanging out with his wife. And I don't know. I thought he was a great, scummy character when he was like Johnny Ace's second.
Yeah, he's a good non-wrestler.
Yeah. Then Skip Sheffield, aka Ryback. Mm-hmm. And then Michael Tarver, he was future endeavored. He was fired shortly after this, right?
Yeah, Tarver had, I mean, I don't think it was maybe like 2011. It wasn't a very long run.
I just saw him on a show too, man, a indie show here in Texas, wrestling in front of about 200 people. Nobody remembered who he was, so. That's what he's doing. And Darren Young came out of the closet, so good for Darren Young, you know. And then they immediately, after that groundbreaking news, immediately he was no longer on TV after a feud with Titus O'Neil. So that's our setup, right? The future, at least with these guys, doesn't look that bright. And we have a 7-7 elimination tag match. So how do you want to do this, Chad? Do you want to go each elimination, or do you want to just talk about the match in general? What do you want to do?
It's a long match. It's a 30-35 minute kind of, they build it. I really think, I mean, you know, every time you hear Battleground or something, the setup for Battleground this year that had it set up for two rings or whatever. So people are like, oh, could this be War Games, or they're bringing War Games back? I don't think that's ever going to happen, to be honest. If they'd have done it, they'd have done it. I think this type of match is probably, I would say, maybe the closest we'll get to a War Games type feel match in the WWE. I kind of got a little bit of a War Games vibe from this, the way it was set up. I thought it was odd that they had a huge brawl to start, and the WWE cleared House of Nexus, and you really thought it was going to be kind of a just out of control, different pairings going off all over the ringside area. Uh-huh. But then after that, it becomes really a traditional kind of 7-on-7 multi-man match.
Well, let's look at some of these eliminations. The first two guys eliminated are Darren Young and Michael Tarver, right? So that tells you what WWE thought of their young up-and-coming
African. Yeah, within like 3 minutes, too.
Yeah. And then after that, John Morrison and R-Truth are eliminated within the first 8 minutes, okay? Then the living legend, Bret Hart, disqualified because he hits Ryback with a chair.
And yeah, I think Bret being in this match is honestly like a make good from the WrestleMania 26 crap with Vince. Just that's the kind of the feeling I got, that they just didn't want that to be his last match. How terrible that match was, and at least with this match you could say, hey, Bret Hart was in there, so this is quote unquote his last match as a performer.
I guess.
I mean, it's not much to go out on, but
yeah, that's his last match in the WWF was Survivor Series 97 in my eyes.
Right.
This is just nuts. And then the abortion of a WCW run. And then our good friend Ryback, you know, he's eliminated by the vicious Edge spear, one of the greatest finishers of all time. Edge's spear. No, not right. It's a horrible finisher.
This was one of the I would say this was one of the worst Edge routine spears I've seen, because this was the first time Edge gets tagged in into this match, and I mean he really looks like a 16-year-old girl going to the dance for the first time, like tearing his hair, overly excited, like jumping up and down. It is just a shitty 15 seconds that the camera's transfixed on him before he eliminates Sheffield, who had a good run up to this point.
Right. I mean, he's the one who took out Morrison and Truth. So
yeah,
right.
and he's the first one they really wanted to make look good, because, you know, Bret hit him with the chair, then I think Jericho hit him with his move, then Edge hit him. So he took two finishers and a chair shot.
Right.
To get pinned. So he's the first one they seem to care about.
I still say there's money in Ryback, so they just need to repackage him.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that's money left on the table there, because I think that
he was the best heel in wrestling on Twitter last year sometime.
Yeah.
He was awesome.
And then after Ryback's taken out, Otunga's taken out a few minutes later by Chris Jericho, puts on the walls. Good for him. And then after that, Chris Jericho and Edge shortly, back-to-back eliminations from Heath Slater. You know, and then we basically have a Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel and Wade Barrett, right? Heath yes. Slater, Justin Gabriel, yep. and Wade Barrett versus Daniel Bryan and John Cena match for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, Heath, I mean, the Heath Slater eliminate. I was looking up the results earlier, and I had no idea what Heath Slater's finisher was here. Apparently it was called Sweetness.
The sweetness.
I have no recollection from that. But yeah, he eliminated Jericho and Edge, and they kind of had a few miscommunication spots where they ran into Cena and were pissed off, and then after the fact they beat up on Cena to basically tell the crowd, we're still going to be a heel after this match. So that was that.
And then, well, then... Yep. Then finally, Heath Slater's taken out by Daniel Bryan. And then you blink and you miss it. Wade Barrett takes Daniel Bryan out. Yep. And after this, shortly after this, one of the worst moments in wrestling history occurs. When there's a beautiful DDT on John Cena on the concrete.
Yes.
It should have laid Cena out. Nexus should have... been celebrating in the ring. There's no reason John Cena should have hulked up and survived that. I mean, that DDT is Jake the Snake versus Ricky Steamboat level devastation shit.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? I mean,
no.
That was a nasty move. And
even Barrett did an awesome job. He sold it too. He went down and he comes up holding his back, you know?
I mean, it was just... great. I mean, that should have taken Cena out of the match. You know, I would have argued you do that, then you have Daniel Bryan against his former partners for the last 5 minutes.
You know? That'd be cool.
Instead, John Cena, Superman, Gabriel misses a 450, pinned. Wade Barrett submits to the STF. John Cena, your All-American hero. And this is like one of those matches where you're like, even if Cena's a good wrestler, the way they book him, it's hard for me to get behind this guy.
Yeah.
You know, come on, dude. You just got your face splattered on concrete. There's no reason you should be with this match.
Yeah.
It hurts me as a long, long time wrestling fan. It hurts me that it went down like that.
Well, it makes you wonder why they even did that spot. You know?
Like, exactly. Or why not do it to Daniel Bryan?
Right. Yeah.
And then Cena fighting for his little buddy or something.
Yeah, they could after Bryan got wiped out with the briefcase from the Miz run in, they certainly could have done that where he splattered on the outside and, you know, Cena's all fired up and just like is seeing red and really kicks ass and wins the match that way. But yeah, the way it was done is, I mean, I think they were running short on time, so that's why we didn't get much emphasis, but it was brutal because there's legitimately like a minute and a half time that elapsed from when he gets DDT'd on the concrete and it looks sick to him celebrating as the pay-per-view goes off the air. There's just no emphasis put on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was pathetic, man. It really bothered me. You know, just like this whole pay-per-view really bothered me. I mean, we talk about bad pay-per-views. The action in the match was good enough. So, you know, I'm not going to call this, I don't know, could this be in contention for the worst SummerSlam ever? That with the Ray match, I know Chad liked the Ray match a lot more, but this did feel like, at least watching it back, it's a show that no matter what, it doesn't hold up in my eyes.
I mean, when we talk about worst ever, I always think of like Russo years, like what was SummerSlam 99? I don't remember. Well, that was...
The triple threat, Mankind. You're right.
Yeah,
I mean, always think of Russo years when we try to go to worst ever.
Like SummerSlam '95. I mean, I think that one's kind of easy to think of with Diesel and Mabel. But the ladder match on that match is better. The you know Shawn Razor ladder match number two is better than any match on this card. For
right,
sure.
Right. That's a match that saves that show. '98. Was a very hot SummerSlam, one of the best SummerSlams. Yeah. That was in the so years. 99, I think. Did 99 have a Shane versus Test?
Yes, actually, yeah, I would say they
had D'Lo versus who did D'Lo fight?
Jarrett? X-Pac, maybe Jarrett or X-Pac?
I think it was Val Venus versus Jeff Jarrett. So it wasn't like a great card, but it was not a bad card.
Yeah, forgettable, but not awful. Okay.
SummerSlams are kind of Russo-proof in a weird way, I would say.
But to me, I'm not saying Cena winning is the wrong result here. I think it is if you're trying to get over the new talent. But the way it went down just frustrates me. The fact that we had a DQ in the Randy Orton Sheamus match is frustrating. The fact that old ass Kane is beating Rey Mysterio is frustrating. This is a frustrating card to watch. The fact that it was only flesh tone and not actual flesh for the Melina outfit is frustrating. You know, the what they did with the Straight Edge Society is frustrating. This is an incredibly frustrating card. It bothers me. It feels like a bummer, man.
What I never like is when on a big show, WrestleMania or some, and even WrestleMania has kind of changed, so I kind of deal with it. But to me, I just think a show like this is where your story should finish. And I think every match except the main event had a post-match moment to it. There was a beatdown. There was a promo. There was continued fighting or something. Like, nothing was concluded, you know? And I just can't imagine having paid $60 for this show and being satisfied with what I would have
got. Oh, man, I'd have been pissed.
Yeah, you know, it was not great.
No.
What do you think, man? What do you think, Chad? Where do you put this in your SummerSlam love?
So I think it's probably bottom three. I was just kind of running through them. Now, 2003, I think, is a pretty heavy contender.
Well, what was 2003?
That's the Elimination Chamber where Goldberg went nuts, got beat by Triple H. So that's probably the apex of Triple H running over people in that terrible reign. It did have, a pretty good Brock angle match, but that's probably the worst one. But yeah, this is a show that's very unsatisfying. I mean, I watched it this weekend, and I won't say it was difficult to watch, but it was a show where the actual action that you watched wasn't awful, but again, felt very, I could see this on Monday night or Friday night. It didn't feel very special in a lot of ways. I would say the main event had that, and the way the match was built, while I would have done different things here and there, I would say up to the Superman. I mean, even if they'd have laid out Cena with that DDT, they throw him in the ring, Barrett gives him the Wasteland, Nexus wins, I would have said they salvaged the main event, because I did think up to a point they were pretty weak in the way they booked the main event, because Nexus was always kind of the numbers game, you know? Yeah. And then at points WWE actually had the advantage. It was really stupid,
throughout the whole match they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up until the 2-on-3 towards the end, yeah.
Yep.
It's just, I don't know. I mean, were y'all frustrated watching this show, though? I mean, I'm not wrong in saying that it's a frustrating show, right? Like,
right. Well, I was watching it again today, and my wife was in the room. She tunes wrestling out, and I looked to her, and I said, you know, I can't believe, like, we're about 2 hours in, and I said, I got another hour of this show to go. You know, it was a chore to get through, you know?
Right.
One thing that I really hate about that spot, and that's almost like an infamous spot now, you know, Cena haters will point to that for years to come. I hate any spot that makes a wrestler look like an imbecile. Why would Wade Barrett even pick him up and put him in the ring?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, to me, yeah. I don't know. I just hate things that logically make someone look like an idiot. So not only did he look like a loser, he looked like an idiot at the same time, which is, I don't know.
Dude, I'm looking at the 2003 SummerSlam lineup. Thank God we didn't have to watch that show. Holy shit.
I'll tell you what. I was live at 1993. Lex Luger, Yokozuna is the headliner.
Express.
Yeah, so that was not one of the best ones either. It was a really good Steiner match at the Heavenly Bodies, but other than that,
man, 2003 is rough, man. Shane McMahon versus Eric Bischoff for 10 minutes? Holy shit. Undertaker versus A-Train. La Resistance versus the Dudley Boys.
Wow. Dudley Boys in 2003. Wow.
Eddie Guerrero versus Benoit, Rhino, and Tajiri in a fatal four-way. Kurt Angle versus Brock Lesnar. I don't remember. It has to be better than the Mania match, right? Because the Mania match kind of sucked. King versus Rob Van Dam, and then the Elimination Chamber. Yeah, that's a rough SummerSlam, man.
Yeah, that's your rough
one. Yeah, thank God I didn't do that show. Holy.
I think I remember that Kane match. That's really bad. Didn't RVD just fall off the top ropes in that match? I think he did.
RVD's horrible, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised.
On Sunday Night Heat, Zach Gowen. Oh, no, it was a forfeit. Never mind. Matt Hardy beat Zach Gowen by forfeit. So one of Zach Gowen's best WWE matches.
God. Man.
But then I would say 2010, this show killed Nexus dead. Like, they couldn't come from this. It was a two-month run for them.
Right. Yeah. And it's a shame, man, because they do this, right? Because then the next summer we have the Summer of Punk, where they build your hopes up just to crush it. You know, what happened in 2012? What was the big moment?
Punk turned heel on Raw 1000, and then Brock got beat by Triple H. So that was... he won that, but that match was really not good at all.
Yeah, man. I mean... This company, man, we're doing a little mini series here on Place to Be Nation called Fixing the WWE. And one of the podcasts, by the time this show's out, it should be up, right, Chad? Fixed part one?
I believe it already is, yeah.
Is it already? All right, great.
I thought I saw it on the.
Yeah,
a little the behind the curtain, but part one was posted while we took our break. So
awesome.
Well, you know, on part one, my buddy Dylan Hills and I, we run down every member of the roster and we decide who should go, who should stay, who should turn to a heel and who should be a face and who should, you know, keep doing what they're doing. And then, you know, part two, we're going to record soon and we're going to talk about some more of the business aspects of WWE and some even like their production aspects, like what they can do to freshen up the product and kind of liven up the product. But this company, man, it's like they make money without even trying, but
they leave a lot on the table.
They don't deserve to make money a lot of times. Yeah. You know, it's sad, man.
They could use a bona fide competitor going against them to challenge them.
Those days are done though, man.
Yeah. This match specifically is a good example of a lot that's wrong with how they do their feuds. Is this result, if this was the blow-off to the Nexus, if this was the end of the Nexus, then you might justify it a little bit. But this was their first big match, you know? If this is the end of the whole story, then it's like, okay. And that's kind of what they do all the time, is they do what should be the ending right away. So then where do you go?
Exactly. And then it ended up with the TLC match with Barrett versus Cena, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Cena got, quote, fired. Didn't he have to join the Nexus, and he just kept beating him up anyways?
Yeah.
So. Oh, dude, that one of the worst. Like, dude, go away. If you're fired, go away. Like, he was fired for, what, 1 week?
I don't even know if he was gone a week, to
be honest.
And then
he came back as Juan Cena?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess we should say, too, I know going into this match there was, of course, the rumors that Cena would turn heel and help the Nexus kind of in a recrafting of Bash at the Beach 96, and that obviously didn't happen here.
Well, let me ask you this. Are they supposed to are we going to do any more SummerSlam shows here at the Place to Be, or is this the last one?
This will be the last one chronological. So this will be the last year up to this point that
they're still going to release shows though, right?
Yeah. We got like a 4 or 5 other in the series. Yep.
Okay. I was just curious, man, because like, what do you think of like this upcoming SummerSlam card that's coming up, man? It feels really weak to me. It feels like it could be a contender for suckiest ever.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, I think Brock versus Cena, we have high hopes that they can be at least a little bit like their Extreme Rules. I doubt you're going to get a match as good as that, but maybe in the same ballpark might help it out. But the rest of the card, I mean, you're looking at really, what, Brie versus Steph is second from the top.
And that's like the hottest program right now, man.
Yeah. Yep.
But in between the ropes, That doesn't sound very appealing. What else? I mean, this shows you, man, when guys like Daniel Bryan are gone, guys like Cesaro are cold, where they're not really, you know, allowed to do what they do
they're
best.
Stalled. Yeah, he's stalled.
You know, when you got the Shield thing, which should be really hot, and they kind of fucked everybody over at Battleground. But, you know, CM Punk's retired. I mean, it really shows you, man, that this company, they're really not as deep as I thought they were. You know what I mean? I thought when we were having the youth movement after WrestleMania or around WrestleMania, I thought, man, this company's in good shape. But they've really killed off a lot of their young guys, like, to where you can get excited for them.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like they have the pieces there. They just can't work them together. And I know one of the kind of to play the devil's advocate argument, people are like, well, not everybody can be in the main event. And that's true to an extent. But you don't have to go to the other extreme where somebody like Bray Wyatt lost to John Cena at WrestleMania. And now he's lost to Chris Jericho, of all people, at Battleground. I mean, that's a character that, I mean, you almost might as well pack him in. I mean, I don't see.
It's rough, man.
It's going to take a lot of rehabilitation to make me take him serious again.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there, man. It's bothersome is what it is. It's depressing, man. I want to be excited as a wrestling fan. You know, I don't want to be depressed as a wrestling fan. So I guess I need to go dig out my old NWA and Mid-South DVDs and just watch.
Global Force Wrestling is on the way, Will.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be the savior of wrestling.
Maybe they'll have a bungee jump match. Who knows? Who knows what we'll see?
I don't think there'll ever be another bungee jump match, but I guarantee you it would not depress me as much as SummerSlam 2010.
You know, something good came out of all of this is I got to see Daniel Bryan live when he was quote-unquote fired for like 2 months at a Chikara show in my backyard. So that was pretty cool out of all this.
Great.
So
that's cool.
I got my picture taken with him and got to shake his hand. So if that's what it took to, you know, if they had to sacrifice SummerSlam for me to enjoy that show and meet Daniel Bryan, I'm fine with that.
There you go. That is nothing else, right?
That's not selfish at all.
Nah.
But, yeah, recommendations, guys, thumbs up, thumbs down. I'm going to go thumbs down. Just depressing show. Don't watch it. Don't waste your time.
For one of your biggest shows of the year, I think you have to go thumbs down. Really kind of feels like the more things change, the more they stay the same. So, thumbs down.
Yeah, I'd probably say thumbs down. I think maybe if you muted it and didn't follow the storylines, just the matches themselves aren't outright terrible. The actual wrestling on the show is not terrible, but it's not good enough to save it at all. So I'd say thumbs down. You can skip it.
All right. And on that depressing note, guys, anything to plug? What's going on with you, Chad?
Well, where the big boys play, I'm not positive when this will be posted, but somewhere around the same time this is posted, where the big boys play, we'll be doing another great historic pay-per-view, Great American Bash 1991.
Which was a better show than this one. I'm going to stand by that. Not the worst WCW pay-per-view ever. You were like...
So maybe some conflicting thoughts on that one. I haven't rewatched, but we'll take Will's word for it as now. I have rewatched the scaffold match, the opening match, so that doesn't give me high hopes.
Not, not a negative 3.5-star match.
Okay.
Maybe
glowing praise.
Maybe negative 2 stars, not negative 3.5.
All right. But yeah, so that'll be posted in or around the same time as you're listening to this, and it's with me, Parv, and Will, so check that one out too.
Awesome. What about you, Jordan? What's going on with the main event? When's that bastard Scott going to have me on again?
I don't know. Tomorrow night we will be taping. I am going to be back. Andrew Reich is going to be back, so you can listen for me when Andrew's not talking. So I'll get about 20, 30 words in there. And I will put in the good word for you, Will.
It's all right.
Would love to have you back.
I love Scott, man. He comes on the reaction show. He has to put up with Johnny Sorrow and all those guys.
You know, the show where Scott went on and battled a few guys over Triple H, that was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, that's because I was the moderator there.
Right. Yeah, that was a good show. So.
I had to make sure that, you know, everyone played nice.
Scott's a good sport.
Dylan can unleash the fangs when he wants to. So.
Yeah, and if you want to know about that, you can listen to his opinions on the Battleground show. So.
Yeah, so I'd like to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Chad and Jordan for putting up with me for the last hour and a half or so. And we'll see y'all at SummerSlam 2014 for the pay-per-view reaction show. So have a good time. Bye-bye. Let them hate. I drop your whole clan. Lay your ass down for the 3-second tag. Your time is up. My time is now. You can't see me. My time is now. It's the franchise where I'm shining now. You can't see me. Yeah. My time is now. It's gon' be what it's gon' be. 5 pounds of courage, bloody face, 10 pants with a gold tee. It's a war dance, a victory step. A raw stance is a gift, and you insist it's my rep. John Cena trademark, y'all are so-so. And talk about the bread you make, but don't know the recipe for dodo. Aiming guns in all your photos, that's a no-no. In this pop, your lip lock, your big talks are blatant no-so. See what happens when the ice age melts. It seems monetary status is not what matters, but it helps. I'm rockin' timepiece by Benny, if any. The same reason y'all could love me is the same reason y'all condemn me. A man's measured by the way that he thinks. Not clothing lines, ice links, leather and minx. I spent 20 plus years seeking knowledge of self. So for now, Mark Breck is living life for wealth. Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now.